Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Welcome back to the Roguecast. We've been gone for a couple weeks, but we are here, and by here I mean in our homes, because...
I feel like we had a good excuse.
Yeah, it's a pretty good
I think it's one of the best excuses.
It's a good excuse for a lot of things, actually.
Yeah.
Like not wearing pants.
Or staying in bed all day.
Yes, you
TV.
The listener, may not know this, but all of us are pantsless now. This will be the most liberated podcast of them all.
It's true. Well, what's weird is we're usually pantsless. We usually take off pants in the office and store.
Well, that's just etiquette.
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
Reveal
but now,
all the secrets, damn it.
But now we're, you know what we are? We're libertines. Anyway, I would like to say that I hope everyone is doing well. And as when I've been into the shop and the off and on the last couple of weeks, it's been really nice being able to at least talk to them and chat it up. And of course, their support has been amazing.
Yeah, that is worth saying. We opened up for delivery, I guess, last week or week before, just like a couple days a week. And we got some orders. We've been running stuff out. We're definitely. Got a lot of support from people. Bill made some big purchases and bought some graphic novels and board games, that kind of stuff. I drove around all of Round Rock and Georgetown and Austin for a couple days there. For those who don't know, the shelter-in-place order is changing in Texas as of Friday, where non-essential businesses, such as ourselves, can be open for curbside delivery only. And as a result, we are going to be open for curbside starting on Monday. As you listen to this, it's Monday, April 27th, where just the three of us are going to be covering things. And we're going to be sheltering in. We're going to be social distancing together. So we'll be like 6 feet apart, wearing masks, all that stuff. Monday through Saturday, we'll be open 11 o'clock a.m. to 6 p.m. Those hours may or may not change depending on what traffic is like. And you can come... give us a call or drop us an email and pay by phone, pick up stuff from the store, whether it's like comics or graphic novels or whatever, or you want to pick up your sub, and we will bring it out to you. You can pop your trunk or your back seat, and we will leave it to you with no contact at all.
I was at the store and taking calls. There were occasionally times when there was like, somebody was like, I want to pick up a Venom graphic novel, but I don't know what there is. And it wasn't too hard to like for me to grab a few snapshots and like post that, send that to them so they could... help figure things out. So we've been able to come up with some kind of good ways to do it, even though you can't kind of come and browse yet.
Yeah, we're doing.
Hopefully, we'll be able to get back to that before too long.
Yeah, we're doing sort of a it's a virtual browsing kind of thing. It's a little personal shopping for us. So we always give recommendations. That's our job. But now we're like even like, well, what do you want for this? And we hold it up to the phone and give you pictures. And it's a little more work, but hopefully we're getting some good stuff out to you guys. And we are working on. Our web store, which at least is going to have very soon a sort of beta list version that's going to have at least titles and basic categories. We're going through and adding pictures and descriptions and all that stuff, and that's going to be a long, years-long work to finish all that. But we will have some kind of inventory up on the website. We'll probably do a beta version for people to look at so they can be like, here is everything that's in the store, and you can call us or email us for more information. So we're working on making a virtual browse. We're also doing virtual browse videos and pictures and that kind of stuff on the Facebook page. So keep up with us
there.
But we also want
to... Randy, you would say probably Facebook is probably the best place for anybody to kind of keep up with what we're doing, right?
Absolutely. We're keeping that updated pretty well. Although if you're communicating with us, email is probably better than Facebook messages because those are easy to get missed.
Yeah.
But we also want to do this podcast where we wanted to talk about sort of the pop culture we've been enjoying, and that kind of, even though there's no new comics to talk about just yet, hoping for that maybe mid-May. We're still waiting on that as well.
Yeah.
We figured we've got a little few trailers that have hit, and for movies that will come out eventually, possibly in theaters, if theaters are a thing still in our brave new world. So let's jump right in with those trailers first. Let's talk about a movie trailer and a TV trailer. The movie trailer is Train to Busan Presents Peninsula. Which
just rolls off the tongue.
I really like Train to Busan. It was a great zombie movie. Nick, I know you're a zombie. Not what's the opposite of aficionado? Skeptic.
Yeah.
Hater.
Hater. I think I can be called that. Yeah, I'm not a big zombie fan. I think Shaun of the Dead is amazing. The Dawn of the Dead series and the remake of Dawn of the Dead that Zack Snyder is really good. But I think I just at some point hit a kind of wall, and I'm like, Actually,
that was like a decade ago, right?
But Warm Bodies was a really good zombie movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I watched Train to Busan, and I know it's beloved, and I would just kind of ho-hum on it. I thought there were good sequences, and there were some good actors in there.
It's interesting.
You know, Train to Busan didn't really, like, reinvent anything. It was just a interesting, you know, like a jump to a culture that we don't see as often, like in the zombie genre. And it did have, of course, the novelty of, you know, extended sequences on trains, literally.
Yeah, and also I thought some of the tension in there was really good. When they were climbing over the zombies in the train cars, I thought it was really well done. But you're not wrong. It's not like a big reinvention of the concept. They didn't change the way zombies operate or anything like that.
No.
But I really enjoyed it.
By the way, just as a quick aside, I think I'm going to wait and talk about this next podcast, so y'all might be able to check it out. Netflix's Kingdom, also a Korean show that is like a period piece thing, like in sort of feudal Korea, that has to do with a zombie type of outbreak. I've watched three episodes and it's really good, and it is more of a reinvention of the concept.
Interesting.
Not a completely new thing, but definitely much more reinvented than Train to Busan, and more in some ways of a serious drama and other ways too. It's I don't want to say too much, but y'all should check it out if you want to see something pretty different in the genre.
It's been on my radar. With the Peninsula, I just watched the trailer just now. You're always hoping when you see a sequel to a movie like this, you want the alien to aliens jump. You know, you want it to be equally good but of a different type of thing, and I feel like there's a possibility here of like, oh, well, the zombie apocalypse has happened, the world has changed, and this is about these heroes like going through, and it's like just hordes of zombies, and I think it's possible. But I think, Dave, you are not as sold on this trailer.
No, I rewatched it too, and it looks like it's... They're trapped behind enemy lines in a zombie completely occupied Korea.
Yeah,
was that right?
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
It is like Aliens, an action movie to the first one's kind of more suspense movie.
Yeah.
And we've seen that work for that movie, that found footage movie Wreck.
Oh yeah.
Which also had a, you know, had like a SWAT team go into this building in the second one, but also threw you a bunch of curveballs. This felt a little bit more like the stuff I normally see from Walking Dead and pretty standard zombie shows, which is big chase sequences that it looked like there was like an arena or something where people who were maybe prisoners or something like that were being fed to zombies. Now, there was also this giant conglomeration of like a bunch of zombies either held together or they were
sewed together or something. Yeah,
sewed together. Yeah, it was horrific looking. I guess it didn't necessarily have the qualities that I liked about the first one, which is, you know, kind of an interesting cast of characters in a tense situation. Kind of like, that's a traditional Hitchcock type potboiler. So it looked all right, but just a little bit more action and special effects-y than I was immediately intrigued by.
I get that. I liked it. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I really liked the first one, so I have hope.
You're a first. Are you going to catch it like first week if you can?
Maybe. I don't know. I rarely see those in the theater. It depends on whether we have theaters and Alamo Pass, and you know who knows what's going to happen in a few months. I have no idea anyway. I can't. I don't know what's going to happen next week.
Yeah. I think I'm going to wait a little bit for reviews on this one, but I would like for the pedigree of Train to Busan to continue. You always want like a franchise that kicks off strong to continue, so you know I'll be watching to see how it's received for sure, and if I can, I'd like to support it.
Yeah, and then there was an extended trailer for Stargirl, which is starting in May, I think May 19th or mid May on the CW. Did y'all?
Yeah,
did y'all
kind
watch
of a
this?
lesser known DC character.
Yeah,
I watched it.
Did you watch this one, Dave? The trailer for this?
Yeah, I don't remember a ton other than you know it kind of had what looked to be some of the standard qualities and a pretty nice budget for a CW superhero show.
Randy, I was a little thrown that Joel McHale is the first Starman.
He's Sylvester Pemberton. He's Star. Yeah, he's the Skyman who has the scepter or whatever.
That was actor.
He's in Community. He's a comedian. By
okay.
It was so
got
weird.
It. Got it.
Nick, yeah. I had the same thing. I was like, is that Joel McHale? I had to look it up because it was such a weird thing.
Yeah, Joel McHale, and then Luke Wilson playing.
Luke Wilson. Yeah. As Stripesy.
Like, Stripesy. I was trying to remember that.
He's the stepdad of Courtney, who is the star girl. I was surprised to see Wildcat, Leolinda Montez, and the new Hour Man. I like that they're touching on some of the stuff that Geoff Johns did so well in JSA.
Yeah, at first...
So let's just quick say, for anybody who's not familiar with the character, she was, like, created in the 90s, and she has ties to DC's Golden Age heroes, right?
Right.
She was based... Geoff Johns has talked emotionally about this on his sister, who died in a plane crash.
Yeah.
Yep.
And but like, he's meant to exemplify all the qualities he saw in her. But yeah, she's like, you know, this is a fairly common trope in superhero stuff, but we don't see it too often in these, like, in the CW and TV era, of the sort of the legacy hero with, like, deep ties to, like, an old, like, the World War II heroes.
Yeah.
Well, and it looks like we're going to see her forming a new team.
Well, and it's interesting, because I think with the timeline, it's going to have to be something where it's not actually World War II, because Luke Wilson is not old enough to have fought in World War II.
Sure. Do they show any clips of it? Like, is it possible, you know, the old Infinity formula from Marvel, or that they have some other reason?
It's possible, but I think they may just not make them World War II heroes. I think they might just make them older heroes.
Yeah.
Because there's a certain pulp look to all those Golden Age heroes.
Yeah, I don't know. But the thing is that he builds, like, a battle suit. He becomes Stripe, and she is Stargirl, and they... In the original comic, it was like the two of them, and it was a thing where she didn't like her new stepdad, found out that he was a superhero, and then she became a superhero kind of to annoy him, and then kind of grew into the role. But also, the interesting thing is, post-Starman, the James Robinson one, she got the star rod, or the whatever that thing is called, that Jack Knight used. And in this, they're just starting with that. Like, those are her powers. She has the star scepter.
It looks cool. It does. Like, I guess that was a Tony Harris redesign, and it's always been a good one. They were smart to keep it for the show and kind of make it her emblem.
I hope they do Jack Knight somehow.
Yeah,
that would be really cool.
Yeah,
I could see it.
Yeah, seeing the little team aspect of it makes it, like, I was interested in Stargirl anyway. It looked fun. The actress looks good. Luke Wilson is good. But seeing that it's also gonna be like a JSA and Justice League kind of thing makes me even more interested in it.
So where is this going to be, is this on CW?
It's on CW, yeah, and I don't know if that means it's in the shared universe CW. Or not
at this point. Didn't they want to make them all sort of a shared universe?
But they
immediately broke that rule, like with all their shows. They started doing weird things again.
Oh, it'd be really weird to like right after the I didn't finish watching Crisis, but I don't mind a spoiler. Did it unify the worlds like happened in the comics?
It did. Even Black Lightning was on the one world and all that kind of stuff. But
it'd be weird to not follow through with that right after
No, because here's the thing. It's still a multiverse, because Titans is still on a different world.
Oh, yeah. I see. Yeah, yeah. And all the other weird DC, so still, basically all the other DC
It's probably. Still a multiverse. Yeah, they just they unified all the CW stuff. It wouldn't be super weird to decide that this is a different thing. But I don't know if they will or won't. We don't know yet. But I'm curious.
Well, I hope they go ahead and just make it part of the shared universe. It's you know, the JSA and all that stuff is such a kind of... It can form such a, you know, like a spine to a setting, you know, when you have classic heroes and all that stuff. So I feel like you just run with it and make like it part of the history.
I feel like they'll do it on another universe, and then in about a year they'll have another crisis, and it'll be brought into the world, and
Infinite Crisis or Final Crisis.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's DC's tradition.
Yep.
So, by the way, it's her name is Courtney something?
Yeah.
Courtney Whitmore.
What is it?
Isn't it Whitmore?
It is.
And she's like a teenager?
Yep.
Is she supposed to be leading a superhero team with grown-ups? Because that's kind of weird.
No, they're all teenagers. I mean, Yolanda Montez, they all seem to be younger. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
They're all sort of
haven't watched the trailer all the way through for a few weeks, and I didn't remember if her new team was, like, adults or not. Okay.
I did find the action to be really cool looking, though. I mean, CW always has pretty decent action, so that doesn't surprise me. But
yeah, it looked like when, like in Crisis, or you know, when they would have some big thing and put some budget into Legends of Tomorrow. It had that kind of look to it.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to some other movie news. Gary Dauberman, who wrote a lot of the Annabelle creation stuff. Annabelle Creation, Annabelle Comes Home. He directed, I think, Annabelle Comes Home, and he wrote It. He's going to be directing a James Wan-produced Salem's Lot.
Produced for what? TV?
I believe it's a movie, isn't it? I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's a movie.
Okay. So Salem's Lot is Stephen King's vampire story.
Yep.
Really good. This was what... Nick, was that written in the 70s?
It was.
And it has a movie that memorably freaked out a lot of people in the 70s, but I think it was a TV movie, changed a fair amount, it was creepy in its own right, but certainly they've never adapted the book, really. Not quite, you know, the way you can do adaptations now with a lot of fidelity.
Yeah, and they did that TV miniseries with Rob Lowe. Probably like 2006 or 2004.
I forgot about that. I guess I never saw it.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't great. Like, kind of that era of all things Stephen King were kind of eh.
They were a little bit schlocky.
That, by the way, describes almost everything Rob Lowe stars in.
Yep.
He's okay in ensembles, but if it's a Rob Lowe starring vehicle, you probably want to steer clear.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
what do you mean you're not watching James 911 Lone Star?
911 Lone Star? No. I call this the rule of Rob Lowe.
How low can you go?
How low can you go?
James Wan produced. Yep. That's a good thing. Yep. James Wan, of course, has made the horror movies Saw, Insidious, The Conjuring,
Aquaman.
He's Aquaman. Yeah, he's not just horror people.
Fast and the Furious.
Did he actually do Fast and Furious?
I think he did one of them. Yeah.
He did okay. Three, didn't he?
He did three of them, or he did number three?
He did number three, I think. I think number three was him. I could be wrong.
I don't know. I forget the directors.
Or are you confusing him with Justin Lin?
Is Justin Lin a protege of James Wan?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay. But I think I consider James Wan's appearance in this to be good.
Yep.
As far as like the guy who wrote It, I have mixed feelings about the It movies, so that's not necessarily a full win for me.
Furious 7 was James Wan.
Yeah, he did Furious 7.
And let's see, there's what else was I going to say? Something about the So you said the guy did all the Annabelle movies?
Yes, but I know that you guys have mixed feelings on.
The only one I liked was actually the last one.
And that's Annabelle that's comes directed, so you know maybe that's
okay.
Good.
I'm down for it.
There's enough stuff in the mix here that the stew could come out all right.
Yep, that's true.
You might be like, there's one carrot that went bad in there, but but it's mostly pretty good.
That's a weird metaphor, Dave.
I know. but more than anything, I would like to recommend that people read the book Salem's Lot. It's a super fun read.
It is.
I don't believe in reading books.
All right. Yeah, fair enough.
So Sam Raimi has confirmed that he is going to be directing Doctor Strange 2, Multiverse of Madness.
We talked about this once upon a time, right?
But it wasn't confirmed yet. It was like a
Yeah, it was just a rumor.
You know, I remember, and even now, it surprises me a little bit. I know that there's a fair amount of fond memories of Spider-Man, but they've also his Spider-Man movies, but they've also been eclipsed in a lot of ways by the Marvel stuff. But people were really excited to hear this, and I don't know if it's just all the old Evil Dead fans who are just like, "Yeah, Sam Raimi, anything, sure."
I'm excited by it. I think.
Or what? But
I think
I was surprised how many people are interested.
I think Dave, you and I were both a little lukewarm on Doctor Strange. Like part of the thing with Doctor Strange for me was that it was a little dry compared to the other Marvel movies, and I think
Sam Raimi's
sort of sense of humor might give it exactly what I want, especially if he's doing a big multiverse thing. I think it could be
maybe
perfect.
He's probably going to do more goofy stuff with the cloak, though, right?
Oh, that's probably true.
Fuck,
we just have to learn to live with that. That's the
I've already kind of made my peace with it because we've mentioned this any number of times. I like Doctor Strange's appearance more in the other movies, like when he showed up in Thor Ragnarok,
yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, me too. I like it better than the movies.
And I liked him in the various Avengers movies,
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, Nick, are you yay or nay on Raimi doing this?
I'm fine with it. I'm trying to remember the last Raimi movie that he directed.
Drive Me to Hell? Was that it?
Was that really the last one?
I'm not sure.
Nick, he didn't do that. He didn't do that one with the crocodile in the basement movie, did he?
No, he didn't do Crawl. That was the guy who did something Aja, or I forget his actual name.
Oh, yeah, David Aja. He did The Hills Have Eyes.
Yes.
And one or two, a remake, and one or two other things.
It might have been Drag Me to Hell, and I love Drag Me to Hell. It's a goofy, totally Sam Raimi film.
It is a party horror movie with gore and scary stuff and ridiculous moments. I have not seen it but the one time, but it was a lot of fun.
So he did direct one movie after Drag Me to Hell. In 2013, he did a movie called Oz the Great and Powerful, which I have never heard of.
Because that had, what's his name? James Franco and...
Mila
Kunis was like one of the witches. It looks like what Tim Burton does now, his kind of special effects fairy tale crap.
I do lump Raimi in with Tim Burton at this point. They're kind of over their prime bit, but I don't know. They could surprise us.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm curious to see what he does.
I'm ready for the man who produced Hercules and Xena to take us to the next level.
Well, I think you guys know that when he gets loose, there's going to be carnage.
Yes.
we can only be talking about the Venom sequel.
We have a title for the Venom sequel, and the title is Let There Be Carnage.
I saw somebody in a post say, was Maximum Carnage too much of a mouthful? Or...
Oh, man, Maximum Carnage is perfect, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm perfect.
I guess that kind of implies that there's been carnage at all.
Yeah, Maximum Carnage is a good third one when they bring in the other symbiotes.
Right, right. That is a later carnage outing.
God, I'm gonna have to watch this damn movie, aren't I?
Well, you should watch Venom.
Should I?
Yeah, it's a good quarantine movie.
I was gonna say at this point, Randy, what else are you gonna do?
I have so many other things. I haven't reached the end of Netflix yet.
I'm
for the credits.
Because I did not expect to like Venom, I am completely prepared for sequels to go awry.
Yeah, sure.
But I actually think there's enough of the core stuff that's in place here was a lot of fun for me, and so there's actually pretty much just as many reasons why I might like it. So I'm still kind of excited about it.
I usually just have to turn Venom off when it gets to the end credits. Or fast forward through them at least, because I really don't like that Eminem song.
You don't hear that
it's horrible. It's just horrible. You just gotta grit your teeth.
How many times can you rhyme Venom with something else? I mean,
but you have to grit your teeth through it, Nick, so you can get to Woody Harrelson's...
No, that's why I said fast forward.
Yeah, his fright wig version of Cletus Cassidy.
I want him to continue to wear the fright wig, but I don't think we're going to get that.
No, they already said he's like shaved his head like natural born killers, I guess. He could have been really something different. He could have been something special. A Ronald McDonald of evil for the era.
Would have been fun.
To go back to talking about James Wan... He is working on a show for Netflix with Stranger Things producer Sean Levy, based on the YA novel There's Someone Inside Your House, which is about a young girl whose high school friends begin to die in a series of gruesome murders. It's called a 1980s and 90s slasher movie meets a John Hughes coming-of-age childlike tale like The Breakfast Club.
That sounds kind of watchable in that sort of Scream kind of way.
Yeah,
it's in early development, so we won't see it till probably next year at the earliest, but it's intriguing.
Yeah. I do like watching teens die.
Well, Dave, have I got news for you?
There's a whole genre of films out there. Actually, those are generally my least favorite horror kind of movies, but there have been good versions, and Scream is actually a perfect example of one. And if there's some John Hughes elements, that feels a little bit like Scream's kind of self-aware, wittily written characters.
Yeah, for sure.
Randy, have you seen Scream?
I've seen Scream 1 and Scream 2 and 3. Did they make another? They did one another one after. It's called
They did Scream 4.
Was it called Scream 4?
Randy, you've
it was.
Okay.
You've seen more Scream movies than I have because I've only ever seen the first one.
I actually like all the Scream movies.
I really like 2. 3, I did not like.
I'm gonna put these on my list for Halloween. Yeah. I've started making that list, and I'm gonna watch some more Scream movies.
Okay,
I definitely recommend them.
Cool. All right, so then Dave, Myst is becoming a TV series. I know you were excited about this.
Oh, yeah, that is not to say, like, The Mist, like the Stephen King short story and Frank Darabont movie, which already also became a TV series.
Sure.
But Mist with M-Y-S-T, the old PC CD-ROM game from the early, what, 90s?
Yep.
Yeah.
That was, like, the earliest sort of showcase of CD-ROM technology, even though it essentially worked as, like, a slideshow, not, like, full 3D experience like we would expect now. But yeah, it was famous for its kind of puzzles on this strange and mysterious island, and you would travel to these different worlds where, and it had a kind of a deep backstory where there was this culture that actually lived like as a lost civilization on Earth that would they found a way to write books, and in writing books create literal worlds that they could then travel to and explore. And the game was kind of you dealing with the central island of Mist and going to some of these different worlds after a kind of tragic event. Now, because they couldn't do big interaction with, like, characters and creatures on the island, the games had this kind of desolate feel.
Mm-hmm.
But the backstory on it is anything but. There's, like, a whole civilization that was sort of lived in underground, like a subterranean civilization. And I've even read a few of the Mist books, and they've actually been pretty decent. They're written by the guy who co-wrote the game. I'm a fan. I think this series could actually have a little bit of, like, kind of, well, depending on how they do it, Game of Thrones depth of, like, character and, like, world building and kind of a cool, weird exploratory vibe. I don't know if it'd be set in the present or back in the day when that civilization, the Dunny, were at their height, or what they're doing with it, though.
Right. That's news, and let's go ahead and take a break, and then we're gonna come back and talk about some TV that we've been watching. Okay, so one of the silver linings of the dark cloud that is the coronavirus is that there's a lot more time to sit and watch TV.
Right.
And
the weird time.
While that didn't have any effect on my viewing, because I watch a ton of TV, I think Nick probably does too.
Yeah, it's true.
Dave's probably seen a little bit more TV than he usually does.
Yeah. I've been watching movies and TV stuff and having a lot of fun.
So, Dave, I know you just watched Lost in Space on Netflix.
Yeah, like at most things, I'm several years late to the party.
that's not several years. That's just like a year.
It's
aren't they about
two.
To do season three?
Yeah, season two just came out a few months back. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. That's not too bad for me.
Did you catch all season one and season two, or just season one so far?
Just season one so far, okay. And I watched the first episode of season two, which was great.
Okay.
So I didn't know what the deal was going into this. I think I had watched some months ago, I decided to watch the first episode, and I was like, okay, I can see both why people liked it, and also why I think people like you, Randy, were like, eh.
Yeah, it didn't do much for me. I watched like 3 or 4 episodes, it just didn't click.
Yeah, it did not immediately draw me in. I think part of it was because I was playing the video game No Man's Sky, yeah. Which is all this kind of space exploration, somewhat survivalist at times stuff. And I was like, oh, this is kind of a nice little tie-in. And it sort of got me watching it. And once I plugged into its vibe, which is that it's a pretty serious and the word I keep using to describe it is harrowing. And like when they're in danger, it's actually pretty serious. There's a scene in the first episode where who are the girls? There's Penny and is it Judy?
I don't know.
I think that's right.
Nick?
I think that's right.
I think so. Anyway, Judy, who's the doctor, she's like frozen in this alien planet's ice from when she was trying to do a dive onto their ship that sank beneath some ice and in the super low pressure system entered and like froze everything. And she like spends like 20, 30 minutes more for the character. It's supposed to be like a few hours or whatever, frozen in this ice, almost, you know, like immobilized. And like I got tense watching it.
Yeah.
And that's standard for the show. There's actually a lot of scenes where they're in very dangerous circumstances. But this show, which of course is a more serious remake of the kind of campy 60s show, which was itself meant to be like the old Swiss Family Robinson, a family trapped on an island, put into space.
Yep.
You know, where they would kind of have these kind of fun adventures, which kind of seemed like, you know, an adventuresome camping vibe. And The new show, though, has like, you know, I could always think of it as like the Mass Effect look, that kind of cool, realistic sci-fi look, or quasi-realistic.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's a family who, after a, like a, what is it, a asteroid or whatever hits the Earth and devastates it and makes it a dangerous place to live, they begin using some faster-than-light travel options to try and find a new world. And there's like a lot of people selected for it, but the Robinson family is who our focus is on. Everybody is in one of these sort of they're on like a larger ship, but they have to. There's a big incident in the first episode, which there's some revelations about later on that has to do with the robot in it, where they have to flee as their ship is destroyed and they crash land on this planet. And it is primarily the Robinsons, but in the like last half of the season, there's actually several other, like, there's probably, what, a few dozen other people, Nick, who show up? At least, like, 20 or 30 people?
Yeah. I mean, they are part of a large, like, colony looking for other places to live, and they sort of get separated, and they...
Yeah, but they're all crash-landed on the same planet.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's more people. There's also Dr. Smith.
Right, Dr. Smith, who's essentially a stowaway who falsified her ID, played by Parker Posey.
Yeah.
She's great. I really do like Parker Posey in this.
The more the season went on, the more I liked her. Even though she's just a terrible, terrible person.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, awful.
Unrepentant. as good as, like... Actually, so even the family, though, I was going to say, is, like, kind of clean-cut as they are. And they are clean-cut, but they're also... this actually kind of bothered me a little early on. They're kind of at odds. They were like, you know, the parents were borderline divorcing. Mm-hmm. There's like kind of there's issues with abandonment and estrangement going on. The kids have all of their own issues as well as like some rivalries with each other. They tend to be able to come together, but it's like it's a difficult ride. And they're like they're not this perfect 50s nuclear family like the old show was.
Yeah,
right.
But when they do, it's funny, they used the, way back in the day, John Williams, in his earliest days, composed the, Lost in Space theme.
Hmm.
And, although the show is not the kind of bright-looking show that the original was, they do use that theme during these kind of triumphant moments. They reorchestrate it so it has that big kind of Hollywood quality you like. But I actually, like, always do get a kick out of it when it happens. That generally when they're pulling off some big thing, some big escape or whatever, it happens. And I always dig it. But they also, so essentially they are operating out of their sort of crashed ship, which kind of looks a little bit like a saucer, but think Mass Effect style. They've got the Chariot, which is their sort of all-terrain vehicle. And then they've got their wits and whatever they came with. Mm-hmm. And... you know, endless sort of difficult survival stuff on the planet, complications with the robot, with Dr. Smith, with ultimately meeting the rest of the colonists, mm-hmm. and with trying to find a way to get back in touch with the mothership that may or may not still be in orbit, and figure out exactly what happened, and if they can get off the planet, which has a... they find out not too far into it that it has a light timeline that... at which point it will become uninhabitable.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I've actually ended up really liking it. I had to plug into its vibe, though. And it was not... It's not completely approachable in the way that maybe it should have been. I don't know. I guess I like that it's different.
Yeah, when I watched... I didn't hate it or anything, but it definitely felt like... I was like, you know, I have so much to watch. This wasn't quite grabbing me. I don't really want to watch the rest mm-hmm. of it. So as well as, if I had a lot of extra time, I would watch it.
Nick, have you watched... what have you watched?
I've watched the entire season one, and I think a half or three quarters of season two.
Okay, so you're a little bit ahead of where I am. Generally liking
it? Yeah, I really like most of the characters on there. I mean, some of the Robinson family are a little cut and dry. I mean, the acting is not amazing throughout, but there are standouts. I really like...
You know,
I really like the smuggler that becomes their pilot, essentially.
Who is?
They're Don West.
Yeah, they're Don West. I think he is a really cool character, and I like that actor. I can't remember his name.
He's no Matt LeBlanc.
I knew somebody would bring that up at some point.
He actually reminded me, because he's a little bit of a, not quite a motor mouth, but he reminded me a little bit of what's his name, Michael Pena.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's a little bit more of like a little more Harrison Ford to him too.
Yeah.
He's a little bit of a badass, but there was something of that quality to him which I really liked about
him. But I like the sort of back and forth that he and Parker Posey have as they are sort of mm-hmm. the stragglers who join the Robinsons.
Watching her like slither out of all these situations when you know she's bad, and a lot of times they after a while know she is a bad manipulative person,
yeah,
but they kind of come up with reasonable ways, especially in the second season and that first episode, for them to kind of work together,
yeah,
and without punking out the Robinsons and making them seem stupid.
Yeah,
yeah.
The second episode or second season episode, I'm a minor spoiler, but Randy, they're on a different planet for various reasons, and that there's some other fierce survivalist stuff going on, and they need like a high degree of electrical charge to get going,
mm-hmm.
and they're on this kind of windswept shore on a methane world, which is like poisonous, so that they, you know, they've started like they show a year's time has passed,
mm-hmm.
which I think allowed for the kids to grow up a little bit and for them to have an explanation.
That makes sense, yeah.
And they've sort of set up like almost like in The Martian, they've got bays where they're growing food, where they kind of erected tents, and they're like doing okay, but they don't have any good way to get off. But off at sea, there's this like area that has these lightning storms always in the same place, and they don't know what the deal is. But the mom, who's the big sort of scientist, and you know, definitely the brains of the operation,
mm-hmm.
She gets this notion to use the Jupiter ship. Essentially, and build over the course of like a few months, sails for it and use it as a seagoing vessel to get to the lightning.
That's kind of cool.
And charge with it, and it's really cool. There's of course it's a very stormy thing. Without giving, I'm going to go ahead and say it because it's not too big a deal. They are having trouble, and Dr. Smith knows how to sail.
Yeah.
And so they have to like, they literally have no choice. It's life or death. They have to let her out. They've kept her like locked up for like a year. So, so you know, it's like, not like they didn't throw her in jail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, I've had a lot of fun with it unexpectedly.
So to jump to one, this is the thing that rarely, if ever, happens. I think the next two shows are shows that Dave has either caught up or was ahead of me on these. This never happens because usually I'm way ahead of you on the TV. But the first one is Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, which I think we might have talked about the first or second episode of previous podcast. But
yeah, now, we at least touched on it.
It's now hit episode 10. The pitch on this, if you've not seen, is basically this this girl who works at a tech company, sort of an Apple-esque kind of startup, but they make like a fancy like tech watch. She has an MRI, it goes weird, and she suddenly can hear people's thoughts in the form of musical theater numbers.
Yeah, and it's like specifically
music.
Like pop music. Yeah. Yeah, like if someone was sad, they might be singing a sad song. If they were, if they just had sex, they might come out singing like what's the movie where he sings the Hall & Oates song?
Oh yeah, 500 Days of Summer, yeah.
500 Days of Summer, like that, but of course the deal is only she can see it.
Yeah.
She sees their inner thoughts and kind of dance numbers, but then, every, you know, like seconds after it ends, people are just like going about their business as normal. They don't get it, but she has these amazing insights into people and has to decide whether to help or not help.
And so she has this neighbor, Mo, who's a transgender guy. Transgender girl.
Gender fluid.
Gender fluid, yeah. Who basically convinced them, they make these rules to themselves that she has to help if she hears about it. And she has a father who has a degenerative disease. He's basically nonverbal. He is
and effectively paralyzed.
He's going to die at some point, and she can see him sing and dance. Her mother is played by Mary Steenburgen. She's got her brother who's married and about to have their first kid. She's got a guy at work who she finds out is her best friend who she finds out is in love with her. She's got her boss is this older woman who's getting divorced. She's got this guy who's like supposed to be getting married, but they have a mutual attraction. And there's all this like great character stuff. This easily could have been sort of schlocky, and every so often it is.
Mm-hmm.
But
every
episode there's something about it where they like really get you emotionally.
And yeah.
They've really kind of they kept exploring the sort of the rules of it. They even gave like the little douchey tech bros who work with her. They gave each of them sort of a focus on the episode of getting their own songs.
Yeah, their dude bro love affair stuff was great.
Yeah,
and Leaf, by the way, so everybody on this show, we should say, can sing.
Yep.
They're well cast in general. but like, no, you know, Mary Steenburgen can sing. Leaf, the guy who's one of the dude bro guys, can actually sing great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think Mandy Moore, of all people, choreographs the dance numbers, which are actually really fun, too.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's her.
So they,
but
as,
so,
as they got in a little
for
bit...
For me, what... Well, go ahead.
So as they got in a little bit, one of the things I really liked about this is that, some of the drama stuff went in unexpected directions. They did a thing I always love, which is when someone is getting to the point where we're keeping the secret is ridiculous, and Flash and CW shows are really bad about this. They actually had her just straight up tell somebody. And I was glad that they did. And I thought that was a really good evolution of the character relationships. And also, we get to an episode later in where she's kind of having a break, and she starts having these... She's basically singing her own flashbacks. But the flip is that everyone else sees her start singing, and she can't control the singing and dancing. She just starts doing it at very inappropriate times.
Yeah, like during a presentation at work. Mm-hmm. And it's because, like, she's gotten some rough news about her dad, which is one of the deeper things that goes on in the show. But yes, there's a lot of thought put into it so that, like, they were aware early on that she's kind of, in some ways, getting an unfair, social insight into people.
Right.
She's trying to use it to help them, but, like, her best friend, who's got this deep crush on her, is in love with her, or at least he thinks he is.
Yeah.
He, when he finds out about it, he's mad, like, that she's, like, kind of been seeing his heart. And he, like, in an unfair way, she knows stuff about him he doesn't want to have revealed so early.
Yeah.
And so they acknowledge it, and then, of course, they turn it on its ear. They're always actually playing a little bit with the rules of her weird power.
Mm-hmm.
So that, people hear all her innermost thoughts in that one episode where she kind of has a breakdown.
Yeah. I really like this. I'm super excited. I think episode 10 might be the end of the season. Or there's 11. Didn't we find there's 11?
Yeah, I think that's there's two episodes left, whatever that's going to put it at.
Yeah,
it might actually be 12 episodes.
Oh, okay.
It was the show that I didn't know that I kind of needed, that because I like musicals and stuff, and this isn't quite a musical because it doesn't use original music, but it functions the same way. It uses pop music, whether it's like, it could be old school, like stuff. They've actually once or twice used a song from a musical because somebody sang from Jesus Christ Superstar at one point.
There's a great use of is it Van Morrison's
Moondance.
Moondance. That was a great use of that.
Yeah, yeah. It's very touching sometimes.
Yeah.
Of course, especially the stuff with her father.
Yeah.
But a lot of the stuff I really like. Her mom is great.
Yeah.
And I also really like Mo, the gender fluid neighbor.
I
There's
do too.
A
great character.
Or her landlady, or landlord.
Yeah.
Who has an episode devoted to him that has to do with actually like his church going experiences where he sings in the choir but is not out as gender fluid and yet usually projects as such a kind of confident, sassy person.
Speaking of musicals, Nick and I have been watching an older show. Glee, which is up on Netflix. There's 5 seasons.
Yeah,
I heard y'all mentioning this. Now, what put that on your radar?
I'm watching it with someone who really likes it, and she wanted me to watch it.
So. And I was looking for something kind of lighter and fun because...
The same reason Zoe grabbed me.
Yeah. And, this kind of came out of nowhere for me because I was not expecting to really plug into it as much as I have. I mean, I like musicals, and I like... Jane Lynch is always on my radar.
Jane Lynch
is
great. She's the sort of bad guy of this, and she's hilarious.
Yeah, who
awful.
Is she?
She's hilariously
She plays the
awful.
Coach. She plays the coach of the cheerleaders who is sort of threatened by the Glee Club getting any kind of... So she hates the guy who runs Glee Club. She has, like, a local news segment. She's a conservative woman. She is a... she's, like, her Cheerios have taken nationals, and she is just not happy that... that the Glee Club is trying to horn interactions. So she basically interferes with them at every turn.
Yeah.
She is... patently awful. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Let me quick ask, because I don't know much about this show. Are the songs in it integrated into the actual Glee Club stuff? Or, like, is it like Zoe's, where they're in some ways people break out into spontaneous musical numbers?
No, they're always performances. However, they definitely do sometimes do a, like... They're in the Glee, the choir room, like, singing, and they'll show what the production looks like with them, like, doing dances and having cross costumes.
Right.
Like
yeah.
So there's a little bit of both...
Like, the interactions are with the kids and sort of what they're dealing with. Like, one of them is actually dealing with, like, teen pregnancy. Like, the head cheerleader got pregnant, and they're having to deal with sort of the fallout of that. And also the will-they-won't-they get together with, you know, the head football quarterback who is actually, like, really enjoying Glee Club and is as a phenomenal singer, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, man, the best singer, though, is it Rachel? Who's the actress who plays Rachel?
I don't know.
She's so good.
She has an amazing voice.
Yeah, so the music and arrangements is fun. This is a lot of the... Pitch Perfect definitely drew on Glee. In fact, they make a reference to Pitch Perfect to Glee. It's got a little bit of that, sort of the, you know, these kids that are... they're picked on. This is not the cool thing to do, but they're trying to become like the best at this uncool thing. And they've got a kid in a wheelchair. They have a there's a very diverse cast. They address the fact that the one African American girl is like, you guys always leave me alone until you need me to solo, and then you come to me to do a backup bit. You know, there's a lot of sort of teen drama of romance and that kind of thing. But they handle like teen pregnancy well. They handle a sort of there's a lot of sort of will they won't they secret affairs, that kind of stuff that you'd expect in a Ryan Murphy production. But there's also some really solid believable stuff about like relationships and marriage and that kind of stuff too.
This is sort of a Ryan Murphy production before he became full on Ryan Murphy, because like
it's American true. Ryan Murphy, remind me what he's
produced. American Horror Story,
People vs. Scream, Simpson.
Is it Scream Queens?
Scream Queens, The Politician on Netflix.
And this is pretty diverse. That's actually a pretty diverse selection.
And this one is a little more reined in. I think because it's not just him, it's a couple of other people who are producing it.
It's him and Brad Falchuk who are the American Horror Story team. They do a lot of stuff together. It definitely is like a little over the top. You can see the Ryan Murphy in it. Like their drama is melodrama. But
I know that some people like Glee is also in some quarters hated.
Yeah.
And I was trying to decide if people are just like, if it's like backlash against kind of like musical theater nerdiness stuff, or if it's like kind of like a little bit of the, because the drama is a little CW-y or a little just too melodramatic.
It does a lot of queer themes and that kind of thing. And I would guess that some of that was a sort of pushback against political correctness.
On
the other side, probably people who think that they are, they should be canceled because it was in the 90s and they were probably doing things that were insensitive and trying to show them.
Right.
Yeah, the one story arc that I was... Basically, the Glee Club's... The person who runs it, his wife and her sort of hysterical pregnancy...
She's awful.
She's awful.
So terrible.
That was the one storyline I'm like, end this, come on.
I was really ready for that to get done with. Because, it's not like Jim Lynch's character where she's awful in a fun way.
Yeah.
She was awful in a I-feel-bad-for-everyone way.
Yes.
But the music is really good. The arrangements are really good. If you like sort of a cappella musical theater stuff, I really enjoyed this. I would say anybody who enjoyed Pitch Perfect or Craziest Girlfriend should give this a watch.
I agree.
To bounce back on that, like, so I think I probably wouldn't quite like it because like the a cappella stuff isn't really my thing. And actually, my one complaint about Zoe's Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist is that a little bit of like some of their top 40-ish music, especially some of the recent stuff. I'm not into it. Like, mostly I don't like that music.
Well, they just did an episode that was entirely, and I could tell this was when they promoted at the time, because it was on Fox. It was in a Madonna episode.
Yep. Okay.
So, Jane Lynch
that actually sounds all right.
Obsessed with Madonna, and so they did like five different Madonna songs.
I will say,
it was great.
The music choices are not like all just top 40. They do kind of a list of like oldies and 70s.
They did Baby Got Back, didn't they?
They did the Thong song.
Yeah, that actually, I think I saw like shared around the time it came out, like it's just like on Facebook and stuff.
It's pretty diverse.
It actually sounds kind of close to the blend that they have then on Zoe's. It's just that whenever that blend leans into like stuff from the last 5-10 years, not always. I can enjoy a cheesy Katy Perry song or whatever, but sometimes what was it? There was something in the last episode, which you haven't seen, Randy, so I won't say what it is. That I was like, I don't like this guy.
Then you should give this a shot. I think some of the melodrama stuff will maybe put you off of it, but the actual musical stuff is really good. So you might see if it resonates with you.
I like some character drama.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. To change gears completely, let's talk about Harley Quinn, which I have finally been talked into watching. As Anna said, all it took was a global pandemic.
it took some time on this. I was also late to the party, and I've only seen a few episodes. You've seen, I think, all of the first season, and Nick, you're completely caught up, probably?
I'm completely caught up as well.
I haven't watched last week's episode yet.
Okay, yeah, I've watched last week's episode, but other than that, I'm caught up.
Yep.
It's super good. It's better than it has any right to be.
Wouldn't you say that tonally, so this is the Harley Quinn animated thing that runs on a DC streaming app, and it has a R rating to it. It's very foul-mouthed.
Yep.
And tonally, I feel like it's somewhere between, like, Venture Brothers, Archer, stuff like that.
Sure, it actually tonally feels perfectly in line with the Harley Quinn Birds of Prey movie.
Yeah,
that sounds right.
Except that this Harley Quinn is clearly from the Batman the Animated Series.
Do you think so?
I definitely get that sense that this is supposed to riff on the animated series a little bit.
It's a sort of a tongue-in-cheek world too, though it has some serious moments.
Yeah, I do think we're supposed to have seen this as like this is the Harley who was in the animated series to some extent. It kind of feels
like maybe how she sees the world that she was living in. Like for Batman, it's all grim, dark, and serious, but for her, it's a little bit crazy.
Yep,
I love the voice cast. Speaking of. They got Diedrich Bader to come back for Batman. He's perfect for this. Chris Maloney plays Commissioner Gordon. Lake Bell.
Do you see what I mean, Randy? Like that
Ivy,
Gordon,
like,
even though he is like treated as a comedic character,
oh, he's a jerk,
isn't he kind of like constantly on the verge of like a meltdown?
Yes.
Yeah, and having trouble with his wife. Yeah. Uh huh.
Yeah, and like if it was much more serious, I'd probably be like, they're treating Commissioner Gordon like a joke. I don't like this. But within the tone of the show, he's hilarious.
Yeah, it's really funny. It is the one sticking point for me. I'm like, man, they really sell out Commissioner Gordon here. Like he's pretty awful, but he's such an.
But a lot of the characters are so bizarre. I mean, is it King Shark who's like their social media expert?
Yes.
King Shark is so good. Is he Ron Funches? Isn't Ron Funches
voice
in King
Shark?
Yes,
he is.
Yes. Oh man, so good.
yeah.
I also love,
and it's.
The
writing is just super funny.
They're Dr. Psycho who can't stop saying the C word.
Yep.
That is such an edgy joke that really works.
Yeah. I think actually vast majority of the jokes land. I mean, this is...
Oh, they do? It's really funny.
It's
also super violent.
Yep, super violent.
Yeah.
Super sweary.
So in the handful of episodes I saw... and really, I'm just going to, like, talk... It's like, I think I've seen three episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the first episode, though, I did think that the deal is she gets sold up the river. And we talked about this a little bit way back. She gets sold up the river by Joker, and she's in, like, Arkham for a year waiting for him, or something like that, for him to come rescue her. And it does, in its weird, crazy way, have something to say about people who are pining for a lost, abusive relationship and how hard it is for them to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, everybody around her at the asylum is trying to help her realize this, and she's just not getting it until kind of, like, maybe the very end.
Yeah.
But it actually, like, there is some depth of character like that.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, there's an arc. Like, she wants to join... She wants to be a member of the... Not Injustice.
Injustice?
Not Injustice. That's... It's...
Legion of Doom.
And they don't take women. They're sexist. And it's just kind of funny. There was one previous woman, the Queen of Fables, voiced by Wanda Sykes. She was great. And that's an odd... There's some odd characters here. Kite Man has a big runner where he's like Poison Ivy's secret boyfriend. There's so much like cool little stuff. The episode takes place in Penguin's kid's bar mitzvah.
Yep.
Like, it's got this mix of just completely sublime and ridiculous. Like, I think the arc of Harley trying to become her own woman and get recognition is really a straightforward, good story that's told alongside this thing full of, like, dumb jokes and violence.
Yeah, like she tries to get an arch enemy, and she ends up having to deal with Damien, who's played like almost like a little kid from Charlie Brown or something.
And she can't kill him. She's like, he's a kid. I can't do anything to him.
Yeah. I love, is it, what is it, King Shark goes crazy because he gets a whiff of blood in that one?
Yeah.
There's also some great episodes that deal with like Harley's like inner psyche, where they go into her brain and deal with that, and her going home to her parents and sort of dealing with
that. That was really cool. Is that from the comics?
I've never heard of anybody.
I don't know if it is or not, but it was a really interesting dynamic.
It feels like the kind of that could have been from like Paul Miatti and Connor's run.
Yeah.
They deep in that character a lot.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
interesting. They dealt with her parents, and it was really good. Yeah. Yeah, I'm loving the show. It's actually I'm glad I got the DC app just to watch this. I mean, I also got to finish out Young Justice.
Randy, do you see what do you think like my sense is that it's the kind of show somehow the trailers didn't do it justice. They did show, you know, you saw some like funny bits here and there and all, but it just kind of can't show you that there's a little bit of heart beneath it, and it can't show you, like, they didn't, the funniest jokes sometimes need a little bit of room to breathe and to build up from other stuff, and you just kind of can't, the trailers didn't catch that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I also think, yeah, that it just needs a little longer form, like you said, it needs a little room to breathe and room to grow, and you have to watch an episode to get it. But yeah, it's really fun. I'm kind of surprised that they are not doing the sort of Harley and Ivy lesbian romance, and I'm surprised.
Yeah, it actually, for the kind of the cutting edge show that it is, it seems like obvious, but I think, are we going to go there?
I don't know. I'm surprised they're not doing it, but it works because they're sort of female bromance is so strong. Like, the way they support each other is really interesting.
I bet it gets to it. I don't think they'll ignore it.
Yeah. It's less of a romance than it was in the sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge of the animated series, which is kind of interesting.
Right. And, of course, the animated series at least began it as a little bit of a kind of a lurid thing from Paul Dini.
Yeah.
Great characters, but there's no doubt there was a little bit of the old lipstick lesbian kind of fantasy stuff.
Sure. All right, let's change topics again for a show on Hulu that is a Freeform show. Freeform being the previously ABC Family.
Which I want to say before we say it, this does not feel like ABC Family. This show.
No, it does not. No, it does not. And I wasn't going to watch it because of that. This is called Motherland Fort Salem. It is a story.
Say the name again?
Motherland Fort Salem.
Okay.
The pitch on this is basically there was a witch, there's a powerful witch during the Salem witch trials who made a deal with the U.S. government. She's like, don't burn all of us and we'll become your military. And then we jump to modern day. This witch is still alive because she's draining the life of other witches.
Yep.
And that basically every witch is conscripted into the military. And so this is entirely female. When we talked about this on my TV Dudes podcast, one of the guys pitched it. He's like, basically it's Harry Potter meets Top Gun.
That's weird.
With a little bit of flavoring of Sabrina in there, I think. But it is definitely, it's an all female going to boot camp kind of thing. And one of them is having a lesbian relationship with someone who has another agenda. One of them, her mother got the other girl's mother killed in combat, at least so they believe. And one of them was in this sort of conscious objector compound, and she, against her mother's wishes, joined the military, even though she could have opted out, which usually you can't. Yeah. So these three women are the leads, and one of them is super ambitious, and her mother is driving her to become like the best witch ever. One of them didn't even want to be here, and her mother died in combat, and the other one chose to be here, but she's sort of this naive girl. And there's also this terrorist threat called the Spree, which are these witches who are like launching massive terror attacks,
like killing thousands of people.
People just commit suicide because of a word that got out or something like that, and so they're fighting to free witches, and you're like, oh, well, I can get behind that. But the way they go about it is so horrific, you're like, oh, I can't get behind that.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about. Because it sounds like this initial deal sounds awful, and the notion of the military, conscripting anyone against their will sounds awful.
Right.
And I was wondering, do they portray them as badasses like Jack Bauer on 24, or is there some moral ambiguity running through it all?
A little of both, actually. Yeah. Nick,
okay.
You remember they did the episode with the special ops where the witches go in and they're using they're swinging their whips that they use their weapons. It was very cool.
Well, it's kind of cool that these witches, their main weapon is their voice. So all their spells are actually like vocal octaves that some can be heard and some can't be heard. There's just a level of detail to sort of the storytelling that I wasn't expecting.
Is it based on something?
Oh, I don't know.
No, I don't think so. It's from the guy who did Claws, the nail salon store show. It's weirdly dark for a show that does not feel at all like an ABC Family show. It's like I say, it is very queer friendly.
Well, yeah, but it's also
what's the guy who does Glee?
Ryan Murphy.
Is this like the queer horror crossover? Is that running thing for some of these producers?
It's possible. But I mean, this is like, it's violent, it's, I don't know if I'd say it hypersexual, but it's definitely got an element of sex to it that I was not expecting.
Oh, for sure. There's the whole Beltane, which is like once a year they gather all the witches with a warlock camp
and have an orgy.
All these All these teachers have an orgy that they use to power their spells for a year.
Yeah.
Oh, so there's warlocks and stuff in it as well?
No, not in, they were just in the Beltane episodes. Like, we see the witches.
Okay. Yeah.
Clearly there's somebody called the Witchfather, and they clearly have sort of a male cadre that they use.
Never mind, but where is this running?
It's on Hulu.
Yeah.
Hulu, okay.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it. It's definitely,
that sounds,
I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, me too.
I do like my action-adventure stuff, and as long as it's not just pure rah-rah-rah, like, good thing we enslaved the witches.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Then I'm interested.
If anything, the tone of it is very CW-esque. It is very much relationship drama and that kind of stuff.
And
I kind of wish the world... I wish the world thing was a little deeper.
Yeah.
Because I want to know more of this history, but it's being used as a backdrop for some really interesting storytelling.
I agree.
All right, well, that'll wrap up TV for us this time. And I think that might wrap up the podcast for us, because we've gone a little long. But we'll
maybe do some talk about some video game stuff next time.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some video games, some movies. We're going to get back to that at some point. And hopefully we'll see some of you guys at the store, well, through glass and through the glass of your cars, but in the next couple of weeks. And spread the word that we're open, that we're doing curbside. We're doing our best to keep things running. And it's challenging. We hope everybody is out there staying sane and staying safe.
Yep.
And until next time.
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.